Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Science Studio program. My name is Keith Pannell, and today we're going to be talking to an environmental scientist who's interested in using solar energy for remediation, using solar energy to develop hydrogen economies, all sorts of things associated with solar and the environment. And his name is Wong Yong Che, and he's from the Pohang University of Science and Technology in South Korea. And Wong Yong, welcome to Science Studio.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting to this program.
Let's start out, before we get on to your various activities, and they seem extraordinarily numerous, and I congratulate you for that, but let's learn a little bit about yourself, Wong Yong. Mm-hmm. How did you become a scientist? What was it when you were a little boy?
It was largely influenced by the social environment at the time. Why, during the 1970s, and Korea actually experienced a very rapid economic growth. And all the government and education put very much high value on science and technology. Every kid are actually dreaming about being a good scientist and great engineers as their career goal. I mean, nowadays, the environment is quite different. Many kids want to be a medical doctor or a lawyer or entertainment starring, like a singer like that. But in my times, most kids are dreamed of being a great scientist and engineers.
So that was, in a sense, rather similar to what happened in the United States post-Sputnik.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When the Sputnik went on, the country suddenly sort of shook itself and said, well, where are all our engineers and scientists? Uh-huh. So a similar sort of effort
in Korea. I just take it for granted I should be a scientist.
All right. Well, so how did you choose what science to do? Physics, chemistry, engineering?
Well, actually, I wasn't quite sure what I really liked it. But anyway, I wanted to go to engineering college instead of a pure scientist. So, I mean, chemistry always, attracted me in many different ways because lab demonstration is always visible and it's much more concrete and tangible.
And sometimes be tangible. A little dangerous, which gives it an extra edge.
Well, so I didn't have any special interest to be an environmental chemist. But I was interested in and attracted to chemistry topics. So that drives me naturally to go to the Department of Chemical Technology.
What did you study?
I went to Seoul National University. There's an engineering college. And engineering college, at that time, we have two different departments, Department of Chemical Engineering and Department of Chemical Technology. I went to the Department of Chemical Technology at that time.
And so that was interesting because that automatically puts you into a line for making a big contribution to the future of technology and industry in Korea. What sort of research did you get to do as an undergraduate, or do you not do undergraduate research in Korea?
We don't have any serious undergraduate research. And then after graduating Seoul National University, I come to the post-doc, the current university, for my master's degree. At that time, I went into the chemistry department, not the engineering department, because at that time I was more fascinated by the physical chemistry. I chose my master thesis topic in surface science, surface chemistry. So, the big vacuum chamber
and
ion beam and interaction with the ion beam at surface and in the ultra-high vacuum environment.
And lead and real sorts of
XPS
different acronyms.
That was actually my master thesis topic.
Just for the audience, these instruments can be about 10 feet high and about 6 feet around.
Oh, yeah, that kind
very of... Very high vacuum inside, very space age. And a lot of people complain that, it's all very well to study chemical processes in that environment, but there's nothing like the real world.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a common criticism the surface scientists get.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, and that's a good way to study the fundamental process taking place on the surface, right?
Right.
But anyway, I worked on the surface science for master's degree, and during that time I developed my interest in basic science, and especially physical chemistry. And then after that, I wanted to go abroad for a PhD study. And then after finishing the master at the university, and I came to Caltech for my PhD to chemistry department. But when I applied to chemistry department at Caltech, I mainly considered joining the physical chemistry laboratory, the chemical physics laboratory like that. But when I arrived at Caltech, I realized that one professor in environmental engineering department is working on environmental chemistry. And I realized that, that sounds like a very interesting topic. And I got, his name is Professor Michael Hoffman at Caltech. And I go talk to him and he talked about his various research utilizing photocatalysis and environmental chemistry. And I was quite attracted to that research topic. So I switched my field from physical chemistry to environmental chemistry.
And that time in Korea, presumably environmental science wasn't particularly developed.
Very popular at that time.
Mean, first of all, a society has to get an engineering scientific activity and network. Then they begin to realize, but we're creating some problems that we have to solve too. So that was the early stage.
Right.
So what did you do at Caltech? What was your particular project?
I worked on the photocatalysis, heterogeneous photocatalysis. Mainly utilizing titanium-based material, TiO2, titanium dioxide. It's actually a very one of the most important industrial chemical produced in large quantity. It has many uses, actually, and its use is ubiquitous.
I think the audience will know it mainly in sunscreens.
Yeah, sunscreen, the cupping paper, white paper, white.
A dye to make it white.
Yeah, exactly. Anything white may contain titanium dioxide.
So what did you find out about this using your studies to do photocatalysis?
This catalyst is utilized as an environmental catalyst that detoxifies organic pollutant in water and air.
So that's what you did for your doctorate
degree? That's my PhD thesis topic, TiO2 photocatalyst for environmental remediating catalysts, for water remediation.
So, in fact, we've got some friends here that do something similar. Basically, the water flows over this surface, but with irradiation lamps, and then organic molecules get oxidized into harmless materials.
That's
the theory, anyway.
Does
it work as efficiently as it sounds?
It has been heavily investigated for the last 3 decades, actually.
Right.
It was a very popular research topic among scientists and engineers.
So does it also get applied much into the water systems in Korea?
Well, it's not actually applied in the real water treatment in a large scale.
Why?
Because the efficiency is not very high, and scaling a process is very difficult. You know, whenever the photochemical process is involved, scaling up is very difficult.
Tell me why.
You need to build a very large solar collector.
Okay.
And if you have some TiO2 slurry, for example, it's very difficult to irradiate the whole water volume with the light because it's very strong.
So it's just that surface layer be effective.
Right.
So do you see in the future that this is a technology that can be approved upon, or do you think this is one of these dead ends? We've learned a lot of basic science, but we're never going to be able to apply it.
I think it can be applied to small-scale application. It might be difficult to apply it for the wastewater treatment plant in the big city or what drinking water treatment in big city, but it might be applied for the small-scale application in the remote area, for example, in the area where there is no electricity available.
Right.
And then no big water facility is not available.
Well, that's an interesting point because there's a sort of some people propose that we've got these massive systems for delivery of electricity or gas water.
Yeah.
And perhaps we could be more efficient if we went to localized centers just for a city block, for maybe even individual houses.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to talk about. Kind of a decentralized water treatment system. In that case, this kind of technology might be a good option. For example, for electricity generation, the current electricity generation is all centralized facility. And the big power plant generate electricity and distribute the individual houses through the electrical transmission system, right? But in the future, people may depend on decentralized, localized power system like the solar panel in each house, producing their own hydrogen.
Right. I've mentioned this before on air. In my own house, we now have gone solar. So we're not exactly self-sufficient, but I think we're about 80% self-sufficient.
So for water treatment, that kind of idea may be applied to the same, in a similar way.
Okay.
Instead of the big municipal wastewater treatment system plant, drinking water treatment plant, we may have a localized small water purification system installed in each house, And in that case, that kind of solar utilizing photocatalytic technology could be a very potentially viable option.
Tell me, I should know this, but I don't. The climate, the weather in Korea, do you get lots of sunshine?
During the summer. During the summer.
Okay.
Yeah, and then and during the fall and spring, well, we actually we have a fair amount of sunlight as well, except winter time.
But I mean, it's not as cloudy as, say, Great Britain or England.
But
even so, I think now I read that Germany leads the world in terms of its dependence and development of solar energy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So especially it's not solar just that you need to have bright sunshine like in West Texas. Let's change topics. Let's go to something that you're actually researching now in your own laboratories. We talked earlier about the environmental feature. Let's talk about a project that you're doing yourselves right now with the focus of cleaning the environment using solar energy.
My research topic at this moment is focused on two different aspects. One is the environmental pollutant degradation using this kind of photocatalyst and sunlight. And the other aspect is generating hydrogen from water using sunlight or converting CO2 to hydrocarbon, which is commonly referred to as artificial photosynthesis. Well, basically the same thing, so producing energy, converting energy, solar light to chemical fuel.
I suspect that the conversion of carbon dioxide to hydrocarbons,
yes.
There's a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, a lot of interest. Yeah,
I mean,
very hot topic.
We talk about sequestration of CO2 and storage, but if we can use it, this would so you get a large group investigating this within your own research group?
Oh, I'm actually part of the center, big center, called Korea Center for Artificial Photosynthesis. We call it KCAP. So I'm a member of KCAP.
So give us an example then of a project within this center that you're doing, something that you're investigating.
For example, in the artificial photosynthesis process, you have to reduce CO2 to hydrocarbon. And in that case, you need a reductant, electron donor, because CO2 should be reduced. Electron should come from somewhere. Usually the Mother Nature actually utilizes water as an electron donor. In the photosynthesis, for example, CO2 and water combine and to make a glucose and oxygen, right? Yeah. So in that case, CO2 reductant is water. So the water is oxidized by the sunlight and supply electron to CO2, and CO2 is reduced. So the water oxidation is actually pretty critical step in realizing artificial photosynthesis. So my part is utilizing, working on the water oxidation, water photooxidation for CO2 conversion.
So now these are processes that are all catalyzed by metals or surfaces, right?
Yeah, in your heterogeneous area. Heterogeneous metal oxide and right. Some modified semiconductor system.
And so you talked about titanium oxide. Is that still your substrate of
not emphasis? Only TiO2, not only TiO2, but other semiconductor material like tungsten oxide and ferric oxide, all different metal oxide material can be utilized as a platform of catalytic material, solar catalytic
material.
That
we've developed anyway from this sort of insistence on using titania to many other metal oxides. You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. Our guest today is Professor Wong Yong Chi from the Pohang University of Science and Technology in Korea. We'll be back in one moment.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. David Niesel.
And I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog. One day, Dave, young people may be going to college to learn how to be an organ farmer.
What? A farmer in Oregon?
No, not the state, the body part.
Right, organ farmers. These scientists are doing remarkable work. They harvest cells from a patient and seed tissue scaffolding for growing body parts. I can't even grow a tomato in my yard, much less an organ.
They've already created bladders and ears. Next on the list are hearts, eyes, kidneys, and other organs. Recently, surgeons implanted a bioengineered trachea into a 2.5-year-old child.
Doctors harvested stem cells from her bone marrow. In the lab, the cells were allowed to adhere to a plastic fiber model of a toddler-sized trachea. Then it was placed in an incubator called a tissue bioreactor.
In the course of 2 weeks, the stem cells began colonizing the plastic, and as they grew, signaled neighboring cells to work together to produce all the cell types needed for a functioning trachea.
Since the cells were her own, there was no issue with rejection. And without a perpetual tube down her throat, The toddler was able to smile for the first time. Unfortunately, she died after 3 months due to poor lung function.
If the toddler had survived, she would have eventually outgrown the implanted trachea because it had a plastic scaffolding. Improvements may include donor scaffolding from cadavers or biodegradable plastic that would allow the tissue to replace it.
What's next are clinical trials and FDA approval so that many others can be helped. As the practice becomes more common, suggestions by scientists and doctors can improve these bioengineered tissues and body parts. Looks like a promising future for organ farmers.
We are Drs. David Niesel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here with Professor Wong Yong Che from the Pohang University of Science and Technology. And before we left, we were talking about your efforts to transform CO2 into hydrocarbons using different metal oxides, again, as what we call heterogeneous catalysts. Mm-hmm. So metal oxide is solid. CO2 is obviously usually a gas, but maybe a liquid. Mm-hmm. And then water, obviously, is usually in the form of steam, but not in the solid form. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how this process works. This is a heterogeneous. Mm-hmm. You've got liquids, you've got gases, and you've got solids. Mm-hmm. How do you bring them together to do the job that is needed?
In my research, usually CO2 is dissolved in water. So water is fully saturated.
Like
in CO2.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, like that. And then, so everything happens in the liquid slurry phase. Mm-hmm. So all the reactants should be diffused on the catalyst surface and then accept the electron from the sunlight excited material.
So is the solid one uniform layer, or is it nanoparticles in a slurry?
We deal with both.
Okay.
Yeah, immobilized thin film or a slurry phase.
So tell us a little bit about the difference of these two. Is one much more efficient than the other?
Usually the slurry phase has a much larger surface area because it's suspended. So it has usually the efficiency is higher. But in terms of the separation, for example, if the product is liquid, you need to separate it out the particle after a reaction, right? That's the one disadvantage of the slurry system. But in the immobilized film system, for example, the efficiency might be a little lower because the surface area is limited. But the separation problem is no serious in that case.
So in the solid surface, not mm-hmm. the slurry, mm-hmm. does the water, the solution, flow across?
Yes, flow across. Yes.
Whereas in the slurry, it's more of a batch process?
Yeah, correct, yes.
I see. So that does pose an extra mm-hmm. step in the process.
Yes, correct.
So how do you separate the slurry? You just filter?
Yeah, at this moment. But I'm not that serious about that kind of separation process, but it's a different engineering field.
Okay,
but what I'm focusing is just increasing the efficiency.
And how do you go about increasing the efficiency? Do you dope the...
Also, hybrid material development with another type of material. For example, my laboratory is utilizing graphene-based material combined with the semiconductor nanoparticle to enhance the solar conversion efficiency.
And for the audience, graphene is just
single layer of graphite,
yeah. Which is what you have in lead pencils.
Yeah, right. Right.
Very, very thin layer. Well, yeah, monolayer. Uh-huh, uh-huh. How does that enhance the activity?
Well, usually the graphene-based material, which is a network of carbon in a two-dimensional, is actually a very good electron acceptor. So whenever the electron is generated in the semiconductor, usually the rate-limiting step in this process is actually recombination within the semiconductor. In that case, whenever there is a recombination, there is a loss of energy, right? But when the electron is transferred to the different phase of material. For example, graphene is coupled with semiconductor nanoparticle, and electron is scavenged by graphene material. In that case, charge separation is achieved much more efficiently, and then you can do the solar conversion efficiencies more efficiently.
That's interesting. So the nanoparticles mm-hmm. are also combinations of the two phases, the metal mm-hmm. oxide and the graphene,
mm-hmm.
are they separated by a linker? Or
oh, yeah, yes.
How do you put something like a metal oxide onto a carbon framework?
Well, usually carbon framework is not purely carbon framework. There are many oxygen-containing functional groups. So like a graphene oxide.
It's, okay.
There are some functional groups dangling on the plane. So that kind of oxygen-containing functional group couples with the surface hydroxyl group on the metal oxide surface.
So you see that to the audience again, it's just the cleverness. People talk about it's graphene and metal oxide, but that's just not the truth, right? The metal oxides have got dangling OH groups.
Oh, yeah, right.
The graphene has got dangling oxygen groups.
Yeah, right.
And so these are very complex materials.
Oh, that's true.
Which leads to the question, and how do you reproducibly fabricate those sorts of materials so that they are a uniform composition?
Well, controlling the uniform composition is extremely difficult. And when people refer to the graphene, pure graphene is really limited. So most of the graphene people are utilizing in the synthesis process is actually graphene oxide. They have many oxygen.
Right.
We cannot control them at the molecular level at this moment.
So it's a bit of a pig in a poke.
Right. It's kind of an average material has just distribution of the functional group on the surface of the graphene.
How do you measure the efficiency of your materials to actually do the job of, say, reducing water or later on producing hydrogen?
We actually measure hydrogen production using chromatographic technique.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we can make a photocoron generated in the electrode fabricated with that material.
Oh, I see.
So that's another way we can assess the activity.
So that's another technology that has to be developed, coating electrodes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Right, because that's not always very simple.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Well, in my case, it's not that. I use a very simple method. So the simple method is I just mix with the carbon wax and make a paste. And then encode it on the substrate surface, and I burn it in the furnace, and the all organic binder paste is combusted away, and only organic component is remaining on the solid substrate. So using that way, we can make a pretty uniform film coated on the glass surface.
Your research group is consisting of large numbers of students.
Mm-hmm.
But having spent time in North America for your PhD and knowing that in America, the United States, and in Europe now more and more, undergraduates are becoming involved in research. Are you bringing that particular approach to higher education back to Korea, or do you still really not utilize undergraduates very much?
Well, I don't use undergraduate students for serious research purpose. But I think it's a very good opportunity for very good way of educating undergraduate students. So some of the undergraduate students actually come to my laboratory and participate in the laboratory activities with the graduate student.
You would have in papers you publish some undergraduate scholars that are also co-authors?
Not very common, but sometimes, yeah. So undergraduate student can be included as a co-author.
Right.
When they contributed in the laboratory activities.
I mean, there is a move, again, in North America to get more of the undergraduate science degrees involving an original research project, right, and having to write a thesis
before they can
graduate.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on that, the pros and the cons?
I think it should be absolutely promoted. Because it gives a student a real idea of what research is like, and seeing the laboratory activity and manipulating the instrument by himself actually gives a lot of good experience for their knowledge and experience.
I mean, it's an introduction to real science because what you learn in a classroom organized laboratory does not prepare you for
reading
a textbook researcher.
And reading textbooks, solving problem.
Right.
It gives only limited experience of what science is, right?
Do you think then that, again, going back to your own institution, is there a move to introduce this use of undergraduate students? I know you say you have a few, but do you think your university is ready for the concept that every undergraduate student should write a research thesis?
Oh, actually, our university is already doing that.
Oh, you already do that?
Oh, yeah. In my university, the senior student, when they become a senior, they should select each one laboratory.
Oh, right. I didn't understand that.
And for the last 1 year, for senior year, they should regularly participate at the research activity with the graduate student.
Okay.
And they should submit the thesis when they graduate.
Let's just in the last few minutes, let's transfer over to this wonderful concept of the hydrogen economy, mm-hmm. all right, that mm-hmm. we're going to develop catalysts, mm-hmm. homogeneous, mm-hmm. heterogeneous, it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. to be able to make hydrogen mm-hmm. directly and then use it perhaps mm-hmm. directly. Mm-hmm. Is Korea ahead of the game in this? Is this a big area of research in Korea?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have natural oil resources.
Oh, sure. No.
So you're more prone mm-hmm. to worry about energy future.
Sure.
So tell us about what Korea is doing with the hydrogen economy.
Well, hydrogen economy is actually a very serious issue in Korea because they have to find a future source of energy anyway, and for security purposes as well, because all our energy is dependent on the imported oil. So it's also a very serious security issue.
Well, you do have some nuclear energy.
Yeah, right? We do have. But there are, it's very socially conflict. when it comes to nuclear power, I mean, a lot of people have many things to say.
In Korea also.
Yeah, against that. Especially it was influenced by the recent accident in Japan.
That's right.
Fukushima nuclear power plant accident. That really concerned Korean people. And that could be a future accident in Korea too.
Because Korea is also on this area where you can have big earthquakes, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, to locate a power station on an earthquake region.
It's all nuclear power plant is located on the eastern coast side. My university is actually located in the eastern coast. Yeah. And that is quite close to Japan.
Right, absolutely.
So
then the hydrogen economy is something that people are seriously investing in.
So wind powered hydrogen production or solar powered hydrogen production or biomass converted hydrogen production, all sort of hydrogen production technology is actually under investigation with the big government support. But some people are very skeptical about this hydrogen economy as well.
Right.
Well, because the technology, I mean, the basic research has been around for several decades, but still the research here is at the fundamental level.
Well, I mean, also the storage of the hydrogen.
People are
making all these, metal oxide mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. organic metal oxide right. materials for mm-hmm. storage. Mm-hmm. Is that an active part of your big solar group?
Not in my solar group. Our group is only focusing on the production side, and we are not seriously working on storage side at all. But that is another area that needs a breakthrough as well. I mean, there is not good enough storage material, especially for solid-state storage of the hydrogen, right?
And so this is something that is not in your particular area of focus.
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Well, just before we break off, I've got to sort of put in a little of my own experience. We've mm-hmm. been working with metal separations using nanoparticles, mm-hmm. And this process that you were talking about of filtering out, because mm-hmm. it's a static system, mm-hmm. but we used magnetic nanoparticles.
Uh-huh.
And so that was rather nice because, mm-hmm. you know, then you turn on your electromagnet, all the particles drop, you can pour the water
out,
then repeat the process over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, our time has run out again, as usual. You've been listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell, and our guest today was Wong Yong Che from Pohang University of Science and Technology in Korea. We'd like to thank you very much, Wong Yong, for very interesting discussions.
Oh, thank you very much.
And like to thank Norma Martinez for putting it together, as usual. And, of course, finally, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.